From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Fremont.
South of Market.
The Marina.
The E.
Coming up, it's been 7 months since 18-year-old Alan Bluford was killed by Oakland police, and the department is still plagued by questions surrounding his death.
There have been things presented as factual information that later turned out to have changed, or things that the department never said to begin with.
We'll also speak with one of the Oakland ministers who's asked the mayor to declare a state of emergency in his city.
Black boys are getting shot and brown boys are getting shot almost on a daily basis.
Then we'll experience a Baptist church service through the eyes of an outsider.
It felt like, for the first time ever, I felt like I understood God.
The faith of a community, today on Cross Currents.
Right. Good evening, Chief Jordan with the police department. I'm here to ask the city to pass the resolution.
At the most recent Oakland Public Safety Committee hearing, Police Chief Howard Jordan was booed as he took the podium. It's evidence of the frustration some Oakland residents feel towards officials these days, with the murder rate at a six-year high and a sharp increase in violent crime over the past year. Jordan was at the meeting to try and reverse those trends. He requested that the city hire a consultant to devise a crime reduction strategy. But his choice was controversial. Former LAPD Chief William Bratton has been widely praised for lowering crime in the cities where he's worked, L.A. and New York. But he's also a proponent of aggressive police tactics like stop and frisk.
Councilwoman McElhaney astutely pointed out last week that her son is more likely to have a gun put in his face by a person with a badge as a person in a hoodie.
Why are you trying to make a policy for stop and frisk?
Police officers are the law. Police officers enforce the law. I am sick and tired of one phrase, quote, unquote, racial profiling.
People without jobs, people working two jobs.
Early this morning, the Oakland City Council voted 7-1 to hire Bratton as part of a consulting team after a meeting that lasted past 2 a.m. The police department is under intense pressure to reform. It narrowly avoided a federal takeover late last year. In addition to hiring Bratton, officials have agreed to hire a court-appointed compliance director who will oversee and direct the department's progress on many issues. One of those is officer-involved shootings. Since 2010, there have been about 5 incidents every year.
This stop and frisk thing, I think, will blow up in you guys' face. I think you let this go on, there will be people killed, or kids will be killed in the streets of Oakland.
Adam Bluford spoke at the city council meeting last night. He's the father of the late 18-year-old Alan Bluford, a Skyline High senior fatally shot by an Oakland officer last May. Inconsistencies have plagued the Bluford case from the beginning, and it's just the latest of similar cases. As it struggles to make yet another round of policy changes, what will it take for the Oakland Police Department to regain community trust? KALW's Kyungjin Lee brings us this report.
They walked out and meet some girls, supposedly. And that's where they were accosted. The police rolled down on the wrong side of 90th Street, pulled up on them with lights out, jumped out with their guns drawn.
Adam Bluford and I are standing on the driveway of 9230 Birch Street, the spot where his son, Alan, died on May 6, 2012. It's about 2 blocks from where Oakland police officers Miguel Masso and Joe Fesmire first saw Alan and 2 friends. In his mind, Adam Bluford goes back again and again to that night.
This is where my son was died at, right here.
Right in the sidewalk.
Yeah, right on the sidewalk here.
8-1 clear. 8-14 clear.
That night, the cops are on duty, patrolling their regular beat in deep East Oakland. Alan Bluford and his friends have just finished watching a boxing match nearby. The officers believe one of the young men has a gun, so they approach.
They asked the young man, had they heard some gunshots or anything. Alan and his friend said they did not.
The officers handcuff one of Bluford's friends, sit the 3 down on the sidewalk, and start looking for a weapon. All of a sudden, Bluford takes off running. Masso chases after him. Bluford points a gun at Masso as they run from 92nd Avenue onto Birch Street. This is according to a report released by the Alameda County District Attorney's Office. The officer thinks his life is in danger I was scared, he says later. It scared the living crap out of me. Bluford and Masso end up in front of a red and white house on Birch Street where a party is taking place. Again, according to the DA's report, Bluford points his gun at Masso. Masso feels threatened. He shoots. What actually happened at that point isn't totally clear. Masso says his first shot caused Bluford to fall into the front gate. But people who saw the incident say Bluford tripped and fell into the fence before being shot. Initial news reports were just as confused. Several outlets reported an exchange of gunfire between the two and that Bluford shot Masso. In the end, none of that turned out to be true.
There have been things presented as factual information that later turned out to have changed or things that the department never said to begin with.
Sergeant Chris Bolton is the chief of staff for Oakland Police Chief Howard Jordan. He says there was confusion in the initial moments after the shooting. He says many officers responded to an emergency situation knowing a fellow officer was down and that a gun was recovered at the scene, but nothing more.
I think what officers at that scene that evening did was draw what appears to be a fairly obvious conclusion, but an incorrect one.
And Bolton says, from the beginning, the police knew they didn't have all the facts.
When you review the crime reports, there are inconsistencies between witness statements.
And there are still questions, like, why didn't Masso turn on his lapel camera? Why was the gun Bluford supposedly wielded found 20 feet away from his body? And why was his fingerprint found on the inside of the ammunition magazine, but nowhere else on the gun? Again, OPD's Chris Bolton.
I think that those matters deserve more review, and they deserve a fair, impartial, objective, thorough review, and not my or anyone else's assessment.
Drawing incorrect conclusions is a problem for the Oakland Police Department. In the past 3 years, the department has had 18 officer-involved shootings, and the people affected are angry. This is what Oakland City Council meetings sound like a lot these days. Things got so heated recently that council members changed the rules for public meetings. But people are still upset. For one thing, the police department's internal investigations remain inconsistent. A recent independent report found that cases where facts are disputed, like Alan Bluford's, are the cases in which OPD exhibits, quote, the most efficiencies and the least inquisitiveness.
Have we been really doing reform for the last year, 10 years, really, have we?
Alla Simmons is the CEO of Youth Uprising in East Oakland.
Because I don't think so. I think that we've been doing, let's rotate the chief and let's have the violence prevention new structure du jour.
She says part of the problem is that the department hasn't had any accountability to the community it serves, even as it enters into the 10th year of court-mandated reform.
We've got one of the lowest rates of police to population per capita of any urban area. We simply don't have enough police to police. The police that we have are not trusted or respected. We have a horrendous closure rate on homicides. We've got federal oversight because of our poor practice of profiling.
Oakland should know who the new compliance director will be by the end of January. This person will be tasked with overseeing police reforms and authorized to make big changes in the department. For real change to happen, it has to be someone both sides can trust. That's a tall order for a city like Oakland. Alla Simmons says outside oversight is both a threat and an opportunity.
I think that the danger of importing people in is that they can see the problems that we have and give us their informed opinion about what we need to do. The question is, can we also create an environment in which they get to understand us deeply so that their solution is suited to what our needs are?
And she says the community has a critical role to play in changing the current dynamic.
Do I approve of the performance of their departments? Absolutely not. Do I have an obligation as a community leader to be engaged with them towards improvement, though, improving those outcomes? Absolutely. And so there we have it. Like, you have to be a part of the issue in order to be a part of the solution.
There are still three pending investigations into the Bluford case. Two are internal OPD probes. The other is by an external Citizens Police Review Board. And that's not including any investigation the new compliance director might perform. The Bluefords are pursuing a federal civil rights lawsuit against Officer Masso, Chief Jordan, and the City of Oakland. Back on Birch Street, Adam Bluford is still haunted by his son's death.
It's horrible. It's horrible to think that my son laid here and died by himself that night. And knowing his last words, he's saying, "I didn't do anything."
We may never know what exactly happened the night Alan Bluford died, but at least some community leaders are optimistic about the potential to finally turn the tide within OPD and come out of cases like Bluford's with more answers than questions. In Oakland, I'm Kyungjin Lee for Cross Currents.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. 131. That's how many people were murdered last year in Oakland. It's a number that's been quoted often already, but what about the number of people who were shot and wounded? That number is close to more than 550 for the last year. And so far in 2013, there have been almost more people shot than days in the calendar year.
Innocent bystanders have been shot down. Grandma Ramona, Little Hiram Lawrence, Carlos Nava, Gabriel Martinez, and others that have just been in, as they say, in the wrong place at the wrong time. How could you be in the wrong place at the wrong time when you live in the city, when this is your home?
That's Bishop Robert Jackson speaking at the Oakland City Council meeting last night. He and other Oakland ministers have come together to demand more aggressive action from Mayor Jean Kwan in response to the spike in violence. They asked her to call for a state of emergency. We reached the bishop earlier today to ask him what that would mean for the city.
Well, the state of emergency will help us get the mutual aid that the Oakland Police Department desperately needs right now. They're not able to protect and to serve the community at large with the numbers that they have right now. They only have somewhere around 620 cops to police the entire city, which we need a minimum of 800. So there's a real discrepancy when it comes down to the number of officers that we need. The state of emergency would call for a mutual aid packet that the state would step in and send in the Alameda County Sheriff's Department, maybe sheriff agencies from San Mateo and other law enforcement agencies, U.S. Marshals, maybe to help us, you know, with to abate some of the problems that we're having around crime.
And Bishop Jackson, you were at the Oakland City Council meeting last night where they were discussing this controversial contract about public safety and the idea of bringing William Bratton on as a consultant. What was it like last night at the City Council meeting?
Well, it was actually going pretty well as far as everybody, you know, giving their views as to what they thought about that. And, of course, the biggest thing was that Bill Bratton would come in with the stop and frisk. It seems to be the biggest thing, racial profiling, you know. And so that seemed to be the real argument, even though, you know, the mayor and the police chief had already said they would not tolerate racial profiling and stopping and frisking. So that would not be a part of any kind of consultation or contract that they would enter into with Mr. Bratton.
Do you support that plan?
Well, I support this. We don't have a plan around public safety for the citizens of Oakland. We really don't have a plan. And so this man, Bill Bratton, supposedly is a strategist that could come in and involve community along with policing and in order to get us all working together to abate the problems that we're having in our city.
And you've said that the violence is out of control. 555 people were shot and wounded last year, 131 homicides. Can you tell us a little bit about who's getting shot and who's dying?
Black boys are getting shot and brown boys are getting shot. And black boys and brown boys are dying. Their blood is being spilled in our streets almost on a daily basis. And if they're not killed or wounded, bullets are fired and rounds of ammunition are being fired in our city almost like Afghanistan.
And there's a question about access to guns. There's a big national conversation happening about it after the Connecticut shooting. It's at epidemic proportions in some East Oakland neighborhoods. Why do you think we haven't called for this to be considered a crisis?
If you really want my honest opinion, I think it's because these people that are dying, being murdered in our streets, and the ones being wounded are mostly black and brown. And frankly, I don't think a whole lot of people care.
And you said you've never seen it this bad in all the years that you've lived in Oakland. You grew up in Oakland and went to Castlemont, right? Or did you grow up in Berkeley?
No, I was born in Berkeley, but I grew up in Oakland. I've lived here 67 years. And I've never seen it this bad. And I've been pastoring the Axeful Gospel Church for 29 years now. And so it's really, and these automatic weapons that these young people are using is just extraordinary. We just, case in point, we had a homicide where the youngster that was shot and killed, there was only one bullet that hit him and killed him, but there was 100 rounds fired. Just imagine, you know, where did that 99 rounds, where did they go? And just see how they're being sprayed everywhere. Anybody's mother, grandmother, child, anybody could have been hit by this stray bullets and these just automatic weapons just firing at an alarming rate. So the safety of the public is my real concern. The sanctity of life, you know what I'm saying, is just not here like we need to. Need to have it.
So there's a big divide in Oakland around how you solve this and whether or not more police is the answer. And I think that was on display at the last couple of city council meetings. Somebody who spoke last night said, what causes crime? Poverty causes crime. Hunger causes crime. Bratton is not going to solve any of those problems. How do you analyze this deep divide?
Well, and they're right in their assessment, because Bratton is not going to be able to solve crime. And if anybody thinks that one man can come in here and solve the problems that we have in the city of Oakland, the only person who can do that is the Lord Jesus Christ. He's the only man that I know that can come in this city and really make a positive change, you know. But as far as Bill Bratton doing that, I don't think so. He's going to give a plan for the community and the police to work together with the problem. But it's going to take a whole lot more than that. But the deal is, we can't solve all the problems at one time. We have to work on first things first. And so priority right now for me is public safety and the sanctity of life. That's first. If we can ever stop the bleeding, if we can ever stop the carnage, then we can move on to the other things that are affecting the crime, you know, and work with the other factors.
Bishop Jackson is minister with Axeful Gospel Church in Oakland, and he's president emeritus of Pastors of Oakland. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. We just did a story about the shooting of Alan Bluford. His family questions the police narrative about Bluford's death, and his father, Adam Bluford, actually spoke at last night's city council meeting. How do you think that the OPD can improve its relations with people living in places like East Oakland, and especially with young people?
Well, I think it can be done. We're already working on that right now. We have a program called Our Kids Program, which is actually ran by the Oakland Police Department and the community and a number of churches working together with young African-American boys in particular. And the ones that seems to be at risk for the gangs and for the street and that sort of thing. And we're having real good success. It's a lot of work, but we're working on it. And so we can see that there are some things that we can do together to build the community trust of the police department, especially among our young African-American boys. And this program is going on right now. We're looking to have a big conference coming up in June at the Marriott, and we're looking for 100,000 to impact 100,000 African-American males to come in and become mentors and surrogate fathers to a lot of these kids that don't have dads in their lives and don't have the mentoring and the coaching that they need to become the successful men that I believe God intended for them to be. And again, with Alan Bluford and his mom and dad, my heart just breaks because of their son and all that's around his death with the police department. I think it's a travesty. It's certainly sad. Alan, again, he went to our school at the Axe Christian Academy here at the church. And so we have had interaction with him early on. So it's really sad to see what happened. And you know, like I said, it breaks my heart to see any parent having to suffer their child being killed. And, you know, it's just heartbreaking.
Why do you think there's still so much animosity between the Oakland police force and many young men, of color in Oakland?
Well, because there was a lot of racial profiling. There was a lot of hostility. The black community has felt from the police department a lot of unnecessary stops and pullovers. And just because they were police and they had the ability to do it, a lot of them feel like the police lied and trumped up charges on them and a lot of harassment from the police department just because they could do it. So they don't have anybody to protest, you know, the treatment that they feel in the black community. I know I wasn't always the pastor, and I had my times with the police department myself. It wasn't always that I was favorable of the police department, and had run-ins with them as well.
Like what? Can you give us an example?
Well, there were times when, you know, we weren't doing anything, and the police would come sort of like just, we would say, just bothering us, harassing us for no reason at all, because we were just there. And apparently there in their mind, we were concocting something or getting ready to do something. So if you're black, you've experienced that. I guess that's just part of being black in America. But, you know, you can't hate the police altogether, because we have to have law and order, but we need law and order that's going to be fair, that's going to be professional, that's going to treat everybody the same way. You know what I'm saying? And not be a respecter of colors, a respecter of people.
And do you think that OPD is making strides in that direction?
I think they're trying to do that. There's a number of great police officers, again, that I work with that I think are great. They're great humanitarians. I mean, they're wonderful people. They have families and everything, too. They have hearts. As a matter of fact, the Our Kids program that's being so successful with our young African-American boys was founded by a police officer, and because he got tired of locking up black boys and putting them in jail. So he started the Our Kids program, mentoring program, and it's being very successful. As a matter of fact, it's being replicated in a number of states now across America.
Well, and I think that that's the question that people are raising. Is a larger police force going to make us safer? And you obviously are saying that you think that it would, but OPD still has to deal with these deep divisions and the perception that OPD is not necessarily going to be on the side of public safety in all cases.
Well, we only have 620 police officers right now, and the numbers are going down while we're talking. They're estimating probably by the end of January, we'll have probably 600. And so they do have an academy going on, but that academy is not even going to replenish the attrition that's taken out a lot of those police officers. And a lot of them are transferring out of Oakland because they don't want to work in the city of Oakland anymore. They're working too long. They're tired. They're, you know what I'm saying, a lot of things going on with them. And so it's a crisis all the way around. We should have a minimum of 800 police officers in order to really have some semblance of public safety in our community. We're down 600, and like I said, it's dropping. Our numbers are dropping. So even if Bill Bratton came on board, we don't really believe there's enough police officers to handle the 911 calls that they have and also to patrol the streets. So either they're doing 911 calls and responding to the emergencies of 911, or they're trying to patrol the streets. They really don't have enough officers to do both.
And you said your heart is just broken. You're tired of seeing mothers with hearts broken and their kids being killed in the streets senseless. the police can do some things in terms of ensuring public safety, but you still have young men running around with guns who are terrorizing people. How do you break that cycle?
That's where we're at right now. You just described it. That's exactly what why we were there last night, because that was our question too. And we have to, we're praying and we're believing God, but we also know that God uses people. And so that's why we were there, to address the city council, because that's the question of the hour. How do we do it? And so Bill Bratton is supposed to be a strategist, an expert in the field. It's interesting to see what he would have to say about it, because obviously none of our leaders in the city have an answer. We can tell you, my suggestion would be that everybody get saved, everybody receive the Lord Jesus Christ, we can live in peace. But of course, you know, that's not going to happen. But that's what we promote as far as the churches. Our prayers are being answered, because when you see 555 people last year wounded and didn't get killed, to me, I give God the praise for that, because that's the grace of God and him answering the prayers of the churches that's praying for these boys that's out there. But still, 131 did die. And those parents, again, those siblings and their extended family, their hearts are just broken over their loved ones dying. It doesn't make any difference if the police is shooting people or if people are shooting people. The fact remains, people are dying, and that's what we have to stop. The first homicide of this year was a 17-year-old, and he was sitting in the car, and somebody walked up on him and shot him four times and killed him. 17 years old, and I had to talk with his mom and his stepdad and minister to them, and I'm telling you, it was just heart-wrenching to see that. He didn't even know what hit him.
What was his name?
His name is Tyrante. It was the first homicide of 2013. Tyrante Mickens. That's correct. Tyrante Mickens. 17 years old.
And you're part of a group of black ministers that are calling for the city to formally declare a state of emergency.
We have asked that, but the mayor says our city does not qualify for a state of emergency. I don't know what it takes to have a state of emergency, but she said we didn't qualify for one, and that's the reason why she hasn't called for it.
Do you ever wonder if waiting for the city leaders, the city leadership to take the lead on this is the wrong approach, that maybe we as the people living in Oakland need to do something?
Well, we're out there. We had 560 people out knocking on doors in the area which they call a killing zone in East Oakland this past Saturday, and we prayed with 441 people. So we do that all of the time. Our church, especially, we're in the streets praying in the neighborhoods, knocking on doors, praying with the people, and even the people are tired of all of that's going on in the community as well. But it's like, the conclusion is, what can we do? What can they do? It's happening, and it's happening in our community, and there just seems to be no end in sight.
Bishop Robert Jackson is the minister of Acts Full Gospel Church in Oakland. If you have an idea about how to reduce the epidemic of violence in Oakland, give us a call at 415-264-7106. Just leave us a message when you call 415-264-7106, and we'll try to put your voice on the air. This is Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. We'll stay in Oakland for our next story, which is from season two of our community storytelling project, Hear, Hear.
Hear?
Hear?
Hear.
Okay, together. Okay.
Hear, Hear.
From KALW.
My name is Alyssa Kapnick, and the place I chose was St. John Baptist Missionary Church in West Oakland.
For this new season of Hear, Hear, we've been bringing you stories from places that carry a special meaning for you. Alyssa chose her place because she used to pass the church on her way to the BART station. Since she's from a totally different faith, she's Jewish, she wondered what it would be like to experience religion and God from such a different perspective. Fully aware that she'd be an outsider, she decided to go one recent Sunday, and she was the only white person in the entire congregation, which is African American. She tells us in her own words what it was like to discover this place, the community within it, and get a new understanding of how God can inhabit both.
So at the very beginning, when I got in there, everyone is singing. Some people are standing up, some people are sitting down, and they're waving their arms around, and they're singing, and everybody seems to know all the words to all these songs. And so I awkwardly stand up sometimes and then sit down, and the pastor walks up, and he is dressed nice. He has got really nice suit on. And the pastor kept calling out, "Does anyone in this room have a relationship with Jesus? Does anyone in this room have a relationship with Jesus?" And everybody in the room is raising their hands and calling out, "Yeah, God! I got a relationship with Jesus! I feel Jesus! I got Jesus in my heart!" And it's this consensus. Everyone has it. They've all, and it's like, it becomes like a rhythm. Everyone in the room is moving around to this feeling of God, like God is pumping them up. And they are just getting higher and higher and higher. And the pastor keeps asking, "Does anyone in this room have a relationship with Jesus?" And everyone in the room raises their hand, except for me and the 10-year-old boy sitting in the row in front of me. And he keeps repeating the question, and it becomes more and more obvious that the only people in the room that don't have their hands up are me and this little boy. And the little boy, like, really brave. He is clean cut. He is well-dressed and brave. He stands up in front of the entire congregation during all of this, and it grows really quiet for the first time in the entire service, really quiet. And he walks up with one of his relatives. And the deacons, who've been waiting for somebody to come and answer this question, sort of envelop him in a circle at the front of the room. And I sort of thought I was off the hook, because this boy didn't have a relationship with Jesus. But the woman sitting next to me said, "Do you have a relationship with Jesus?" And I said, "No, actually." She said, "Oh, well, they're there for you. You should go up there." It's like, no, I'm good, I think, for now. People start holding hands, and the singing has gotten sort of quiet. And the pastor is just sort of like speak singing. And the pastor is talking about pain. He's talking about, he said, I know you're in pain. I know you're feeling this pain. It's hard. And he said, in Oakland, just this year, there have been 126 shootings, and 83% of those shootings have been black-on-black violence. And he looked around the room and he said, that starts here. We have to do something about that. This is us. This violence is with us, and we have to do something about it. I feel like we have a lot of abstract conversations just living in Oakland and living in the Bay Area and talking about race in these sort of abstract ways. We have all these conversations about the violence and the number of shootings, and it always feels distant. It feels like that's something that's happening, but it never happens to anyone I know. And in fact, I've never heard gunfire. I've never felt afraid for my life, anything like that. Just to think that's real for these people, and that's what they were there praying about. It felt real in a way. I felt the way that they were talking about God, the way that they were talking about God as this very real entity, it felt like for the first time ever, I felt like I understood God, which which disappeared as soon as I left. I don't feel that now. But it felt so clear, and it was so powerful in the moment. I couldn't believe how amazing that felt. I've been thinking about this experience every single day since it happened. It was one of the most powerful experiences of my life.
That's KALW's Alyssa Kapnick describing what it was like to visit St. John Missionary Baptist Church in Oakland. We'd love to hear about a place that's important to you. You can tell us using our online recording tool. Just go to HearHere, that's HEARHERE dot KALW.org, and click on Participate. We'll show you how to do the rest there. You've been listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. Today's team includes Isabel Angel, Julie Kane, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Maya DePaula Hanica, Chris Hoff, Laura Sapanara, Panina Eilberg-Schwartz, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Erica Moo, Judy Silber, Ray Sue Sussman, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. The music you're hearing now is by Ma Crew. This San Francisco group blends musical influences from throughout the Latin world. They're opening for Locura this Saturday at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco. The music, featuring our very own Martina Castro on vocals, starts about 8 p.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.